And welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. This week, we spoke with Rose Gerber, Director of Patient Advocacy at the Community Oncology Alliance Patient Advocacy Network. Rose applies her personal experience as a cancer survivor in combination with her professional skill set to help others through their own cancer journeys. Rose's journey began in 2003 when she was diagnosed with early age onset HER2-positive breast cancer.
I was diagnosed with early onset breast cancer in 2003, and when I say early onset, what a lot of people may not realize is that breast cancer in women under the age of 40 is not the norm in any way or any shape or any form. Cancer, as we know, not just breast cancer, is primarily a disease of adults over the age of 60. So for me to be diagnosed under the age of 40 was as devastating as any cancer diagnosis would be, but it was also devastating because less than 5% of the population is diagnosed under that age group. And the reason why I mention that is because at that time, not only was I dealing with the devastation of a cancer diagnosis, but you have to think about the stage of life. In my case, my husband and I have two children, and at that time, my daughter was in kindergarten, and our son was in the third grade. So in addition to the cancer, you know, you're at a stage of life where you're deeply entrenched in raising children. And, you know, I had a very serious diagnosis. And by that, I mean not just the age, but I was also diagnosed with a rare subtype of breast cancer called HER2-positive. And the statistics at that time were less than 20% of breast cancer cases are HER2-positive. Now, at that time, to receive that diagnosis added another level of devastation because that particular subtype, so rare, had a very poor outcome. Now, through the darkness and sadness of that time, something that came out of that that was very hopeful and is now a big part of who I am as a survivor is I was given the opportunity to participate in the Herceptin clinical trial. That particular trial was considered one of the most groundbreaking drugs in cancer history. It was the equivalency of tamoxifen. So of all the things I've done as a cancer patient and a cancer advocate, now as a 15-year survivor, my participation in clinical trials is something that I'm really proud of, and I attribute that to being a major reason why I'm here today. So I had 8 cycles of chemotherapy, and by that, you know, infusion. And I also had 33 treatments of radiation, ovarian suppression. I had multiple years of hormonal therapy. And again, because I was under the age of 40, I was postmenopausal, premenopausal. So I had a lot of experience with different oral therapies. I had multiple surgeries. I was also on 2 other clinical trials. So during that process, I've learned a lot about being a patient. I had many specialists beyond my oncologist, so cardiologist, you know, endocrinologist, neurologist, pulmonologist, radiologist, surgeon. So it's interesting because now in my current role, many people do not realize I'm a survivor. So one time I had someone say, "Well, he wouldn't understand," and I just kind of silently laughed because I'm like, "Oh no." I definitely understand the patient experience. Yeah. So that's kind of a snapshot overview of my cancer patient experience.
Great. And can you explain a little bit for our audience what CPAN is and its role in the cancer landscape?
Yes. So CPAN, the acronym stands for the Community Oncology Alliance Patient Advocacy Network. So we are a part of the Community Oncology Alliance. So COA, a lot of people know us by COA. We are a very unique organization in the fact that we represent the community oncology practices all across the country. And what surprises a lot of people, even people who are very familiar with oncology, is they don't realize that the majority of cancer patients in the United States are treated in the community setting. Now, what do I mean when I say community? When we use that word community, we're talking about cancer centers that are owned by the physicians. So think about that, 84% of the population. Now, at one point, those numbers started to decline, which is why COA was formed, to preserve community care, because there's a lot of benefits to being a cancer patient treated in the community. There's the access to care, you know, locally. My cancer center was less than 30 miles from my home. There's the cost of care. So there's a multitude of reasons why CPAN is very, very unique. And also, I'm sure you're aware, there's fantastic national and grassroots organizations across the country, and most of those are disease-specific, but there's many that are not disease-specific. So lots of great groups out there. But what really makes CPAN unique is that we are advocating for the care. So most patients, when they get involved in advocacy, they will naturally gravitate to their own cancer type. That makes sense. When my advocacy started, I started in breast cancer because that's what interested me. But none of us, and this is a very, you know, true statement of myself, but also basically of everyone that I ever meet and introduce them to CPAN, is we never think about the care. So we think about a cure. When I had breast cancer, I wanted a cure for breast cancer. Every cancer type wants a cure for the disease, and we believe in that. We all want a cure. But what we don't think about is how important the care is. So where we go to get our cancer treatment matters. And I know this not from my personal opinion alone, but something that is very, very unique to my role is I have the benefit of having a huge collective experience from cancer patients that I work with all across the country. And I have literally stood, and I'm not talking about coming in through a webinar, I physically stood in cancer centers from Maine to Washington State to the Midwest, and every single time I'm introducing the topic of community oncology, I start by asking the audience, do they understand where they're being treated? And nobody does. No patient walks into a cancer center and says, I'm being treated in an academic center. I'm being treated in a for-profit. So a big part of what we do is advocate to preserve that community care. Now, why do we want to preserve it? Because patients have really close relationships with their oncologist. I've shared this multiple times. Patients, a lot of times people have a 5-year timeline for cancer patients. Thinking you're out of the system. I'm a 15-year survivor, and I still see my oncologist. So our connection to that community cancer center is very important. So when I ask cancer patients, okay, now you understand about the different sites of care, how would you feel if your cancer clinic were to close? And there's a collective gasp. I mean, it's audible. And this is very real. So since COA started tracking these community cancer clinics closing, over 423 clinics have closed across the country. Well, what does that mean? It means you don't have access to your local care. So everything that we do with CPAN is focused on the care. So we support the cure, but we advocate for the care.
Great. And how do you recommend for others to get involved in becoming a cancer advocate and how they can have their voices heard?
My recommendation is, number one, the patient, and let me clarify too, it doesn't only have to be a patient, because caregivers and family members are very interested in becoming advocates as well. And even though we call ourselves a patient advocacy network, a lot of our advocates are the caregivers and people that might just be friends of cancer survivors. But for your purposes, if we're talking about a cancer survivor, the number one question is, are you ready? You might think you're ready, but a lot of times you're not ready. And I gave a real-life example of myself. I thought I was ready to become an advocate, but then I didn't want anybody to really know my story. I was private at that time. Also, advocacy, and this is something that I've had the benefit of teaching a lot of advocates across the country, is advocacy is not only about telling your story, it's about listening and understanding the story beyond your own personal experience. Now, our personal experience is always going to be a vital part of what we do. If you're an advocate, it's going to be, for most of us, what got us started. But ask yourself, if you're ready, ask yourself what your skill set is. There's many different types of advocacy. You know, I was not able to develop a national program because I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was able to develop a national program because of my business background. Some people might have expertise in being fundraisers. Maybe they've done that type of work in the past, so maybe they can get into fundraising advocacy. Some people really like the support advocacy, so maybe they want to be a peer mentor. So start to think about what type of advocacy you want to get involved with. And then I really recommend getting involved with small steps. My advocacy was a series of incremental steps. I mean, I was so passionate about advocacy that I would do things like worked with the Susan G. Komen Foundation as a grant reviewer for 5 years. I would go to, you know, I would just come up with ideas. I approached my local library and said, can I do a breast cancer display in October? So there's a lot of small ways that you can get involved in advocacy. And I think when you go through that, I've learned this personally and again through my experience with working with a lot of other advocates, is once you go through that experience, you can start refining what your interest area is. I've been very fortunate to have done pretty much every type of advocacy, including research and science-based advocacy, where I did work for the Department of Defense, you know, being a consumer grant reviewer. I'm proud of that. I loved it. But I was not interested in continuing on in the science-based advocacy. And some people, like I know several advocate friends that they love fundraising. Fundraising terrifies me. So everybody has something that they're good at and something that, well, maybe it's not for them. But the good news is there's a lot of tremendous opportunities, and advocacy can be one of the most rewarding pieces of your life, and if that's what you choose. Because also the opposite is, I've had cancer survivors tell me that they don't want to do advocacy, but people are pressuring them, well, why don't you move on and get involved? Some people don't ever feel comfortable in that role, and that's okay too. And I like to talk about that as well, as if you choose not to be an advocate, that's okay. You already went through your cancer experience. That's enough.
And what would you say is your biggest piece of advice that you have to offer for an individual going through a cancer experience? I know usually everybody else tells me that's pretty broad, but one piece of advice that you have to instill, just one, on to people.
Exhale. I would say exhale, and also handle your cancer diagnosis and recovery the way you want to handle it. So as an example, I mentioned I was very private. I wasn't ready to be public, even though I only told a handful of people, and some people were like, Rose, you should talk about it. You know, people want to help, you should talk about it. I did not want to talk about it at that time. So I did what worked for me at that time. So that is my advice for patients is, and especially in the current social media climate, there's a huge myth that everybody that has cancer wants to go public with their story, because we do see a lot of that now. A lot has changed in a decade plus. But for every person out there, that is not the majority. And I know that, again, because I have traveled across the country and met hundreds, thousands of cancer patients probably by this point. And they feel pressure to, you know, share their story, or their family members want to take pictures of them and put it on Facebook. And they don't want that. So handle your own cancer experience how you choose, despite what other people are telling you.
Hey, that was perfect. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon that you think our patient audience should know about?
I would love to invite everyone to visit our website. We're at communityoncology.org. And from our main website, there's links to our patient advocacy website. And anybody can learn a lot more about COA. We're a fantastic organization, though we've talked about CPAN. We also have an administrators network. We have great information on our different legislative priorities. And a lot of topics that will interest patients, such as 340B, which is a drug discount program, pharmacy benefit managers, and everything that we have on our website has the patient connection, like why does this matter to patients? And that's something that will always drive me as the director of CPAN, is why does this matter to patients? So I really believe in being patient-centered and patient-led, and that is who we are at CPAN. So I encourage anyone to visit our website and learn a little bit more about CPAN.
Tune in next week when we speak with Colleen Johnson, a 63-year-old survivor who recently ran 100 miles in an ultra-marathon called Race for the Ages, in memory of the more than 11,000 women who will die of endometrial cancer this year. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.